supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. This July 4th comes at a time when patriotism in America is down. A Gallup poll out this week found only 47% of Americans are extremely proud to be one, and that's down from a high of 70% 15 years ago. And over the past year, fights over the national anthem at football games and how to treat immigrants to this country have further divided the nation. Today, WHYY's Kyrie Greenberg asked some of the youngest American citizens what patriotism means to them.
I will support and defend the Constitution and laws of the United States of America.
This afternoon, Philadelphia welcomed 13 children, one for each of the 13 original colonies, as the country's newest naturalized citizens. The ceremony was held at the historic house where Betsy Ross may have sewn the nation's first flag on the eve of the Revolutionary War. 14-year-old Asad Ali's family came from Pakistan and says becoming a U.S. citizen was a big deal and full of adjustments.
It has like a very diverse community, traditions, school systems and stuff. So it's pretty hard to get used to, but once you feel comfortable, it's very good. I mean, I love it.
He says he and his three younger siblings, who were also sworn in, moved to Upper Darby a year and a half ago. They were naturalized through their dad, who is a citizen and manages a Popeyes. While Pakistan's Independence Day on August 14th is still an important holiday in his family, he says the thing that makes him feel most proud to be a new American citizen is his school.
I actually love the education system. I just love it.
When he was still living in Pakistan, Ali says he learned English through books and movies, which gave him some ideas about American pride. But he says he noticed some things this country doesn't take much pride in.
I thought it's going to be like the freeway, like all like smooth and stuff. And when I got to Philly, it was like all bumpy, potholes and stuff. I was like, why don't they just fix it?
Kayla Davis, a Girl Scout from West Philadelphia, was at the ceremony to welcome the new citizens. She won the Scouts Gold Award for a project promoting religious freedom, which focused on inclusivity in a time of anti-Muslim sentiment. She looks at patriotism this way.
I feel like it's just respecting your country, even if you don't agree with everything that's going on in it or everything that's said, and realizing that you do have opportunities that other people do not have, especially as an American.
Even if the roads are bumpy. For WHYY News, Kyrie Greenberg.
South Philadelphia resident Gianna Graves stopped by our studio this morning shortly after being presented with the third annual Magis Award presented by Mayor Jim Kenney during today's Celebration of Freedom ceremony in front of Independence Hall. I started off asking her about the work that earned her the distinction. Gianna, congratulations on receiving this Magis Award.
Thank you.
The third annual. Why are you being cited?
I'm being cited because of the work that I did at the Attic and Penn.
So describe the Attic project.
Yeah, so at the Attic, I created a curriculum that addressed the intersections of racism, sexism, homophobia, and transphobia. And I presented it at workshops around Pennsylvania and New Jersey so that I could educate people on social justice and human rights. And I could also teach young people how they can create their own movements to create change.
Do you wish that when you were of a younger age, somebody was there for you in that kind of mentoring role?
I feel like if someone came to me when I was a young person and mentored me, I'd be a better activist and I would do a better job at helping people.
You're obviously pretty proficient as an activist, though, being cited for this award. What now is your goal in terms of continuing to work with youth?
It's about waking people up. That's the goal. Teaching people that they have more power over their lives and over themselves and over their community than they think that they do. Growing up, a lot of the issues that I had was I didn't know how to advocate for myself. I didn't think that I could create change or I could change things, even in my school, to make things more accommodating for trans folks or queer folks. But I now know that I can, and I now know that where there's a will, there's a way.
What are the conversations you have when working with youth in terms of empowering them to have their own conversations to try to work toward a better end?
I think a lot of it is breaking down stigma. And I think that's the main thing that you have to do when interacting with youth, because a lot of youth, they come in, and I'm speaking even from experience, and they've been beaten down by society. They've been beaten down by their family. They've been beaten down by their teachers, other kids in their school. And they've been told that they can't do this, or you can't talk like that because you're not an adult. I always tell people, you know, before I had my own apartment or before I was paying my own bills, you know, I was doing a lot of work for myself, and I was going through a lot of things that people don't go through at my age. Homelessness, police brutality, issues with family. And I feel like my lived experience validates me in saying the things that I say. And I think that's what I mean by breaking down stigma, is a lot of times these youth, they think that they're not the amazing young people that they are. They think that they can't do the things that they can do because of what society tells them. And my job essentially is coming in and just being like, no, they were wrong and you're right. You can do whatever you want to do.
Jonna, you spoke about the challenges for a young person such as yourself. Are there any statistics that give evidence to that?
Yeah. 1 in 3 LGBTQIA youth reported assault from family members upon coming out. 1 out of 4 of those youth were pushed out of their homes upon coming out. Over half of Philly's homeless population identifies as LGBTQIA. And 78% of queer and trans youth in foster care were removed from their foster homes because of hostility toward their gender or sexuality. Over half of LGBTQIA youth chose to live on the street instead of shelters or group homes because living on the street was safer for them.
Do any of those numbers surprise you?
They don't.
There must be a lot of pressure then to keep one's identity secret, even from one's loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
Was that your experience?
So I always knew that I was a woman from a young age, but it was definitely frowned upon. And my family kind of were just like, okay, this is a phase that you're going through, and then it's going to be over, and then we're going to move on in life. And then I turned like 13 years old and grew tits, and I was just like, totally not a phase, mom. Like,
do you have siblings, cousins, extended family who've also had to reconcile what they thought you were versus what now proudly declare that you are?
It's funny because my youngest brother, he found out when he was about 4 years old.
And how old were you at the time?
I was 14 or 15. And I basically like sat him down and I described it as, I was like, you know, have you ever had like a sock that didn't fit properly? And he was like, yeah, I had a sock before. I was just like, yeah, well, my gender is kind of like a sock where being male doesn't fit me and it's not comfortable. So I put on other socks that do feel comfortable and that do fit me. And those socks are female. So he basically like was like, oh, so you're a girl? I was like, yeah, I'm a girl. He was just like, oh, okay. And then there was like this long pause and he was like, okay, well.
Okay, what's for lunch?
Is Spider-Man a girl? And I was just like, no, Spider-Man's not a girl. Spider-Man's a boy. He's like, okay.
Ideally, then, I'm wondering if it would be, and again, ideally, best to infuse very young people with the notions of gender fluidity, for example, that
yeah.
they might be most receptive at that point. And the youth you work with, presumably mm-hmm. much older, it's a little bit more of a challenge.
Yeah. When I work with youth that are older, there's a whole lot of unpacking, whereas when I work with younger youth, their head isn't filled with stigma. Their head isn't filled with ideas of what they think the world is. It's very open.
I am envious. You seem to have a long-term game plan. What do you see for yourself in 5 or 10 years?
I hope that in 5 years, I am able to look to my left and look to my right and see other Black trans women who are my age doing the same kind of work. I hate to like make it just be like, oh, what I see for myself in 5 years. But it's like, no, because like my community is me. You know what I'm saying? So it's like in 5 years, I want to see, you know, queer people, trans people, Black people leading movements, taking over roles in leadership, really running the city.
Well, congratulations again on this award and continued success in your work.
Thank you.
That's activist Jonna Graves, this year's recipient of the Magis Award from the City of Philadelphia. It's not news that plastic ends up in the water and harms the environment, but more and more, Towns are trying to do something about it, instituting bans and fees on plastic items to cut down on littering and waste. As WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, one Jersey Shore town took its ban even further than others, and now it just has to get everybody else on board.
Tina Cross runs the concession stand at the Monmouth Beach Bathing Pavilion. She's been doing it for a while, but this is the first year she's had to tell thirsty beachgoers they won't be able to get a straw with their drink.
Every single customer says, can I have a straw? I would think every single customer. And they're like, how am I supposed to drink it? I'm like, mouth, like up. It's funny. It's really funny. Like, people are like, they're baffled.
Cross isn't doing it to be a jerk. She's complying with a new Monmouth Beach ordinance that prevents businesses in the borough from giving out plastic straws, plastic bags, and polystyrene containers like styrofoam. Cross is also only giving out plastic lids if people ask for them. She says many customers get confused when they come up against the new policy.
In the past, I have to admit, I train my staff automatically give them a lid and a straw because it keeps the line moving. Otherwise, they come back for a lid, they come back for a straw.
That was before the plastic ban took effect on June 1st.
So then when I did a 180 on them, they're like, wait, they're looking at it, and they're like, something's missing. So
while I'm at Cross's concession stand, Melinda Gravel walks up to the counter. She's an old friend of Cross's. Gravel orders two fountain drinks.
Oh, you're saying no straws. It's because you said there aren't any. Yeah, I want one. What about a lid? I can't even get a lid now, huh?
Gravel is headed down to the beach. I ask her what she thinks of the new law.
Right. Environmentally, I love it, but it's not good for convenience.
And I see you ask for lids.
Because I'm going to spill it.
Monmouth Beach is a small town. It's got 3,400 residents. Only about a dozen businesses will be affected by the ordinance. One is Beach Tavern, a restaurant near the docks with a view of the Shrewsbury River. Arturo Rojas is the general manager.
It was a little hard for people to get out of that trendy, you know, mode of having that straw. But now that they know that we're trying to contribute a little bit to the environment, a lot of them have been very supportive.
Beach Tavern gives out paper straws if a customer asks, and it uses paper takeout cartons, too. But Rojas says the slightly more expensive paper products haven't caused Beach Tavern to raise prices. And both he and Tina Cross say they support the town's effort to reduce the amount of plastic in the environment, even if that makes business a little harder. Sue Howard is the mayor of Monmouth Beach, and she voted for the ban.
You know, if you live on the shore and you walk on the beach and you see plastic straws, styrofoam containers, you know what the damage is.
She says more than 20 towns have contacted her in the last month asking how they could ban plastics and polystyrene too. The way Howard did it, she reached out to the business community early, let them know what the ordinance would do, and then made the case that it would help the environment. Other towns have passed similar bans. Jersey City and Hoboken, as well as shore towns like Long Beach, Belmar, and Point Pleasant Beach have all banned single-use plastic bags. Other towns like Teaneck, Longport, and Ventnor have put 5 or 10 cent fees on bags. The state legislature even passed a bill that would impose a 5 cent fee on plastic and paper bags statewide, but Governor Phil Murphy has yet to sign it. Environmentalists, though, say the ban in Monmouth Beach is the most comprehensive of its kind in New Jersey. And Mayor Sue Howard says she would love to see other towns, even the state, follow suit.
You know, we didn't always have styrofoam. When I was a little girl, we didn't have it. We had paper straws when I was young. You know, I'm going to sound like back in my day person, but the point is that we can live without these plastics.
But just because Monmouth Beach banned its businesses from giving out plastic straws, plastic bags, and polystyrene containers doesn't mean they don't still show up on the beach.
Oh, there's a straw. There's a couple straws.
Colette Buchanan and I are walking on the public part of the shore in Monmouth Beach. Buchanan is a member of the Monmouth Beach Environmental Commission, which spearheaded the ban.
But like you said, they could have been from anywhere, right?
They could have been, and the ban does not ban, we did not ban use of the straws. We banned distribution at the establishments.
Buchanan says members of the Environmental Commission began discussing the ban last fall. They were concerned about the amount of plastics being left not only on the ground at Monmouth Beach, but across the globe, and what effects it was having.
Straws have ended up in the nostrils of sea turtles, causing them death and distress. Plastic bags in the ocean in particular look like jellyfish or look like other prey for sea mammals such as some whales, dolphins, also for fish.
The plastic and polystyrene ban in Monmouth Beach is only about a month old, and Buchanan says it hasn't been a magic bullet yet. But she says even if there are a few straws here and there in Monmouth Beach, the ban is a huge step in the right direction.
Part of what we hoped for by passing the ordinance, the ban, is not only to ban it in our town, but to educate people and bring the problem to people's attention so that they become more aware of it and take steps on their own to address it.
From the New Jersey desk, Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
Through all of the patriotic fanfare, Independence Day in America presents an opportunity to learn from those who fought for a cause. For writer and independent producer David Smith, the lessons learned from the Depression-era struggles of his parents prepared him for an unanticipated battle in his own life and left him with a profound gratitude to others who'd gone before him in that same fight. He shared his story at First Person Arts Slam for WHYY's Common Space.
The house I grew up in highly valued self-reliance, self-sufficiency. My parents were both children of the Great Depression, and they grew up learning how to do without. So my mother took a page from Gone with the Wind and went to her senior dance in a dress she had made herself from somebody else's curtains. My dad grew up in the coal region of Pennsylvania, and when things were really bad, he would go coal picking out in a culvert that ran down the mountain. And they'd look for coal that the company had cast off and bring it home to heat the house. And the culvert was also the sewer line for the town, so it was a tough gig. He once borrowed somebody's Model T to drive to a job, and it broke down in a thunderstorm, so he got it over to the side of the road, and no cell phones, no phones for miles. So he rebuilt the engine right there by the side of the road. Self-reliance, self-sufficiency. And I'm not running for office. I'm not here to tell you my, you know, humble roots story. I just want you to kind of see where I'm coming from. We didn't like borrowing from anybody. We didn't seek help from anybody. My dad came home from World War II and didn't even use the GI Bill. When I got out of school, I started my own business. Ran a business for 30 years. And then in 2008, I got diagnosed with a particularly nasty form of leukemia. Fortunately, I live in Philadelphia, which is the world champion for kicking leukemia's ass. So I was a very fortunate individual. And during that whole time in my life, I learned a lot about relying on people. When I was diagnosed, they told me that I was going to be in the hospital for 30 days, and they were going to give me chemotherapy. And I found out that a lot of people don't understand what chemotherapy is, and what it is really is a giant game of chicken, where they give you massive doses of poison in hopes that it kills the cancer before it kills you. One of the drugs they gave me was so poisonous that if you got a drop on your finger, it would eat the flesh away. They have to put it directly into your heart so that it spreads out on your body quickly. The other drug they gave me every day for 10 weeks was arsenic. And I know two things about arsenic. It's on the periodic table of elements. I remember my grandfather had a box of it in his garage, and it had a picture of the skull and crossbones and a picture of a dead rat. So while I was in the hospital, I got to thinking, because you have lots of time to think in the hospital. You can't turn it off. Who was the first person to say yes to this? Who was the first person who was so desperate that they came up to him and said, "Listen, we're all out of ideas. We want to give you rat poison." And who was the poor son of a bitch who went, "What the f***, why not?" Who was the second person? Who was the fifth? Who was the 50th, the 100th, the 200th. Because to get my weight, size, gender, body type, to get the right dose for me, they had to test that all that out on a lot of people. And not just the drugs they gave me, but the drugs they give us for everything. Who are these people? Who took the bullet for me? Who do I owe my life to? I'm not raised to owe anybody anything. We should have a mountaintop carved in their image. There should be a wall somewhere with the names of all these people who took one for the team. There should be a national holiday where we celebrate the hundreds of thousands of people who are the thin red line between you and cancer. Because I hate to be Davy Downer here, but look to your left, look to your right. One of you is going to get it. And look around the room, because every single one of you is going to know somebody who's going to die from it. And without these people, these nameless, faceless, self-sacrificing people, we're not here. Thank you very much.
David Smith is a husband, father of two, and a 30-year veteran of the film and video business. He founded his true calling at First Person Arts Story Slam. Common Space is a collaboration between First Person Arts and WHYY. Subscribe at Apple Podcasts and Stitcher to hear all of the podcasts from both seasons. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on your favorite podcast app or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.